This is Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Susan Franzen, one of your co-hosts, with Pat Schlarbaum. Hi, Pat, who has been carrying a lot of the load over the past 6 weeks as Local Talk became a hub for information about how Central Iowa is confronting the worldwide COVID-19 pandemic. Pat, you've been in the studio most of the 5 days of the week when we've aired our series, COVID-19 Response. It's great to be with you again, especially on Earth Day.
So yeah, 50th anniversary of Earth Day is something you celebrate, and it's great to be here and continue reporting on all the wonderful people and programs that we have a chance to share with our listeners. This year, we're working on broadcasting the No Contact Eco Fair on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. I know you've been working hard on that, Susan. And we have been gathering sound files for the majority of the presenters to share on Saturday. Also, we will be including conservation voices like Dr. Jim Pease and Dr. Irv Kloss, with many other environmentalists across the state, for a full day of Eco Fair presenters and music, 9 to 5 on Saturday on KHOI 89.1 FM.
Wow. It's good to be back with you. I was able to hear that's a great culmination. But for today, I'd like to feature stories from our listening area. We have a story from Kathy Vaughn at the All Cultures Equal Center in Webster City. That center has welcomed a large immigrant population ever since Governor Robert Ray started welcoming immigrants to Iowa. Then we'll take you to South Story County towns of Slater, Huxley, and Cambridge. Audie Maxey, the superintendent of the Ballard School District, will tell us how the community made sure families met their basic needs in a period of school closures.
Those all sound like great stories, but I think on Earth Day, we need to reflect on the natural world. And Carolyn Raffensperger has some inspiring thoughts about that.
Oh, wonderful. Let's hear what she has to say.
Well, how are you today, Carolyn Raffensperger?
You know, I'm trying to find my way through a lot of anxiety. You know, if you look in 360 degrees, yeah. It looks like trouble everywhere you look.
Yeah, there's a lot of that anxiety going around these days.
I woke up this morning and looked at my Facebook page, and it turned out that it offered a memory I had posted a year ago today, which, by the way, is John Muir's birthday. And John Muir was a great naturalist and really loved the wilderness, loved nature, and wrote about it in a transcendent way. But today is his birthday, and I woke up looking at something I had posted about my birthday, which is just a couple of days ago. And in that memory, I had posted about a dedication I made of the rest of my life. I had a big birthday last year, and I dedicated my life to night, to water, and to future generations. And my sister, Jeannie, was there as a witness. And when I was done making my commitment to these precious things for the rest of my life, my sister said, "You need to add one more." Oh, I thought, well, this is my birthday. And she said, "You need to remember to let the good in. Not just block harm, not just restoring all the damage that's already been done, not just protecting. You need to let the good in." And, you know, in some ways, your discussion of the fox is a reminder of the good that is there. Even if I look around and see, you know, looming trouble, to let the good in, even in this moment.
Yeah, the birds are migrating. The birds are singing. They're joyous mating calls. It is a good time of year to not leave out the natural order of things.
I wanted to ask you about something that was on my mind this morning. I'm not a pack animal. I'm pretty solitary. But I am keenly aware of how dependent I am on other members of my own species, that there's no going it alone. There's no pulling myself up by my own bootstraps. There's everything, you know, my life is tightly connected with others. And I wondered, I was thinking about some of the small birds, the small birds have a mobbing call that they see a big predator. They'll make that call. And I wondered, Pat, if you would make the call, the mobbing.
There are warning calls. It chips that the neotropical migrant, the little songbirds that come here to nest and then return to Central and South America, they have each has a distinctive chip warning call. The one that I'm most familiar with is that warning the chip.
Uh-huh.
And a cardinal is most known for that, I guess because they're the most highly desirable backyard bird and people love their cardinals. Maybe we hear things from them that we're missing from other birds.
I think that's the key, Pat, that we hear the warnings best from things we love.
Oh.
And that we should ground at mm-hmm. what we love and take the warnings seriously. But the thing that I was thinking about with birds, I think of the large predators, the raptors, the owls, that they are not flocking birds. They don't have a whole lot of interaction with their, their entire species.
Yeah.
They don't get together for rock concerts.
Yeah.
But I wondered how you saw their dependence on each other outside of their family unit, specifically, say, osprey. What is your observation of how they relate to members of their own species that are not part of their family group?
Yeah. Well, that's a real good question. For the most part, raptors are solitary. And yet, our national symbol, the bald eagle, are solitary other than in the winter when through frozen conditions, they all kind of group together. And you'll have kettles of vast groups of bald eagles. The ospreys are somewhat social. They nest much closer to each other than about any other raptor. They have a social dynamic that is somewhat unique in that when they return to where they hatched and first flew and first learned how to fish, a lot of times it's with a social community, and they do interact. A lot of the nesting territories, adults are trying to maintain their identities or their privacy. And there's young non-nesting or non-breeding birds that are 2 and 3 years old, and they kind of make a hassle of their involvement around the osprey site. So you can see half a dozen up to reports of 12 ospreys this time of year, but they are generally the non-breeders that are just kind of working together. If one's catching a fish, then they all want to get in and get the fish because that's what they go after.
Huh. Well, it was just interesting to think about how connected we are and how we have our own responsibilities mm-hmm. to take care of ourselves, make sure that we are best able to make a contribution to our family and to our neighbors. And I was thinking this morning about the resistance to the Nazis when so many people found themselves in dire straits. So the Nazis took off after and tried to kill as many Jews, gypsies, gay people. They just went after them and killed them by the millions. And there were people who resisted. There were people who were able to hide others. I think of Anne Frank, who hid in an attic for 2 years.
Yes.
And the children who were hidden by farm families and claimed as their own, or hidden in such a way that they were not discovered and they survived. And the question of Nazi Germany and what my own capacity for good is, has been the central question of my life. I discovered the Warsaw Uprising. There was a major uprising in Poland, in the city of Warsaw, by the Jews who rose up together. And it was one of the most horrific times in all of history. And I wondered what I would do. Would I try to hide someone? Would I share my food with someone if they were starving when I didn't have much myself? Mm-hmm. What is my capacity for good? what is my responsibility in this world to be good? And right now, you know, and I know that young people are listening to this, and I know that you have a capacity for good, for standing with your neighbor, making sure that your friend is okay, that they are, that if they're sad, that you at least are with them, that they are not alone. And I come back to that question, what is my own capacity and responsibility for being good? I've listened to a lot of politicians talk to us right now, and various governors who have not issued a lockdown order or a stay-at-home order are saying, well, you can't infringe on your liberty, and especially South Dakota's governor. I have heard a little bit less of that tone out of our governor in Iowa, Governor Reynolds. Nevertheless, I wondered what it would be like if they spoke to us as people who took our responsibility to our neighbors seriously, that if they treated us as if we were responsible people with dignity that honored the dignity of others, and that they treated us like adults, able to be wise. And I wondered about our responsibility to children to tell them the truth. These are not easy times. We can't lie to our children right now. They have to know that we are facing hard times and what we're doing to mitigate them, to make them hardships but not catastrophes, that we are doing all in our power. And we invite our young people to bring their own wisdom, their own observations of what a solution might be or to a problem that we are now facing, but to stand in this with your own goodness, to bring whatever it is that you have of that righteousness. And there's a wonderful Jewish legend that at any given time, there are 36 righteous people. They're Lamed Vavniks. And those 36 righteous people, simply by their goodness, hold off the destruction of the world. And when I think of some of the young people in Ames, I wonder if one of them might be, or either of, you know, those young people, someone might be so good, so righteous, that they're holding off the destruction of the world. And that's our charge. Our charge is to be good in this world and to let the good in. When you see someone else doing something that is kind, that is wise, honor them, thank them, stand with them, let them know that they're not alone, and we'll get through this. Mm-hmm. You know, my motto is the best defense against hard times is a well-fed neighbor. That includes the songbirds and pollinators. If the pollinators, the bees and the hummingbirds and the moths and are well-fed, if they are well-fed, we will be well-fed. The best defense against hard times is a well-fed neighbor.
Food for thought from Carolyn Raffensperger. Anything else?
I would leave them with that blessing that I call to your goodness. The Buddhists have this beautiful saying, let the goodness in me greet the goodness in you. Namaste. And I love that. Let the goodness in me greet the goodness in you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Look for the good in people.
Yeah. Well, and to let it in.
And to let it in. Thank you to your sister for that. Yeah. The views of KHOI's guests do not necessarily reflect the views of KHOI. This is nonprofit, nonpartisan media. We do provide a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. And in case you just tuned in, Local Talk just opened our 50th anniversary program for Earth Day, listening to the reflections of Carolyn Raffensperger.
Those were inspiring words, but I'm also impressed by actions. That's why I wanted to visit All Cultures Equal Center in Webster City. The new director, Kathy Vaughn, agreed to join us for a Zoom conversation this morning. Hello, Kathy.
Good morning.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little about how All Cultures Equal got started?
All Cultures Equal started, actually, the incorporation papers were drawn up in 2001. They were started in reaction to the large amount of Laotian people coming into the community. So that was a meeting place for them to have meetings, celebrations.
Well, this is a long time ago. I can't remember when Robert Ray was governor. But I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. You probably were a very small child.
The late 1970s, early 1980s for Governor Robert Ray.
Right, my college years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a high point where we were leading the country in the welcoming of immigrants. But now they are enriching your community a great deal, I know. Your previous director told me that if the Latino immigrants left, that your Main Street would just dry up.
A lot of our Main Street businesses have Latino workers or managers. Besides the Marianne's specialty meats and custom meats, hire a large number of Laotians and Latino.
Well, one of the reasons that Webster City is in the news right now is because of Prestige Meats, which had some COVID-19 affected workers. Does that affect the town? Do you have anything you can say about that?
We do have some people in Webster City who work for Prestige. A lot of their workers come from Fort Dodge, Eagle Grove, Clarion. It's pretty new news. I just talked to someone from there yesterday, and a lot of their tests will come back today, so they'll have a better understanding of where they're at.
When I talked to you yesterday, you said that the smaller plants, the meat processing, now what does that mean? What do they do?
They make ham and sausages and bratwurst, lots of bacon, a lot of smoked meats, and they make it for many different labels, and they're very busy.
Told me that they routinely had pretty good sanitary protections.
Yes. When you go into their plant, they all wear head protections. They all have masks. Many of them have full-length gear that they wear around the processing. So they're very careful.
I know you have, at least you did when I visited, a lot of other Latino businesses, like a sporting goods store and a grocery store that specializes in Latino foods.
Correct.
And I can, and of course, restaurants. Are those all closed?
I think that the restaurants are doing takeout. You know, they're all still open. In fact, we have a new restaurant, Latino restaurant, that just opened up in the last couple of months. The store is still there and doing very well. So their businesses are doing pretty well. We've actually increased. We now have a Mexican bakery, and we have a clothing store. So more and more businesses run by Latinos.
And their takeout is doing well?
It is, from what I understand. Yes.
So what about the schools? You must have a lot of Latino students in your schools.
We do. I'm not sure of the population breakdown right now, but the children do very well. If they come in and they don't know English, we have really good ESL programs. And, you know, children pick up language really quickly. Right now, it doesn't matter what race you are. You're sitting at home and your mom and dad are having to deal with you. So it's difficult for, it's like an extended summer vacation. Only the parents are home too, so now they have to deal with it.
Well, you also used to have language classes. Obviously,
yes.
Those had to be suspended.
Right. We had just started one of our classes. We teach both Spanish and English, and right now we're teaching them together. So it's a partnered class We have two bilingual teachers. In fact, one was a teacher from Mexico who taught Spanish to the Mexican children. And then they get to speak with native speakers. They get to see how they make the sounds and what the differences are. And they get to ask questions in a non-threatening environment. We do a lot of laughter there, but it's a good program. We actually had three sessions set up for this year, so we'll see what happens.
You probably don't have a lot online.
No, we don't do anything online.
But one thing that I know you normally do, you have a big garden. You said something about that it's almost planting time.
It is almost planting time. We were just out there yesterday looking it over, trying to decide what we were going to plant. We're going to put in three new gardens, and then we will have 19 raised gardens. We're expanding our gardens to have a huge patch of squash so they can wander around more than in the raised gardens. And we're also planting potatoes this year. Potatoes are something that everybody uses, and we're going to try sweet potatoes. I've never grown those before. But we have a lot of ground out there that we're not utilizing as much as we could. So I think it'll be a big thing this year. People have time to come out and help with it. And we produce a lot of vegetables that we offer to the community. When we pick it, we just put it out on a table and they come and take what they need. But we also have a lot of gardeners who bring produce in. So we have some people who bring in huge bags of green beans or lettuce or squash, tomatoes, peppers, so that people can come and get fresh fruits and vegetables all summer long.
Do you have a food pantry?
We do. We are affiliated with the Food Bank of Iowa. Normally we have our food pantry twice a month. Right now we're only at once a month. And that's partly because we don't know how many people we're going to have. We have steadily increased over the last few months. In fact, almost doubled over the last couple months. We have one again tomorrow. So we're preparing for about 80 families, I think. We used to run around 30. And then it's slowly progressed up to 50. But I think tomorrow we'll probably have at least 80. There are other food pantries in town. St. Thomas just had theirs yesterday. Trinity has one that you do by appointment. The mobile comes to St. Paul's also. And right now we're all afraid we're going to run out of food and that we won't have food to give to people. So that's our biggest concern right now. We've been very fortunate. The community has donated a lot of money for our food pantry. Just in the last month, we've received over $2,000. So that's a huge help. We can focus more on staples that everyone can use, cereal, pasta, canned fruit, nuts. We always provide some kind of protein. So this time, I believe we have sliced ham and we have some chicken. We have pork patties. If we run out of that, if we have too many families, then we also have some cheese and tuna and things like that for a backup. Now, the other thing we do is Hy-Vee provides us with the bakery items that they pull off the shelf when it gets to the point where they can't sell it anymore. So yesterday I went and picked up food from our food pantry, and I had a huge grocery cart of bread and some sweets so that we can hand those out with our food pantry. I'll go pick up again today. So that really increases our capacity, the amount of food that we can give out to people.
Do you have problems with staffing?
Yes. Some of our volunteers, in fact, the majority of our volunteers can no longer come. Many of them are between the ages of 60 and 80. And they're worried about coming and being in contact. So we have three staff members and we handle it by ourselves. So we have them come as a drive-through. And for instance, tomorrow they'll come, they give their name and their city and how many people are in their family. And then they'll come forward and we'll put out bags on the curb and they'll come and pick them up and put them in a car. Before we'd had them come in, you know, and go around the tables and gather their food that way. But it's just not safe to do that anymore. So we'll have them come out of their car, pick up the food, put it back in so that we're not into any contact with them at all.
One of the things I remember that All Cultures Equal did was help people with immigration papers. And of course, this is more or less in crisis. I understand that an order came yesterday from the president that we're not going to permit any immigration.
Right. He's going to suspend it for 60 days. We haven't done much immigration in the last 6 months. We do quite a few citizenship papers. Jen McHale is our advocate, and she does renewal of green cards. But right now, we haven't been doing many anyway. Because it's been uncertain times, a lot of the Latino ladies that we talk to who usually come in have decided to stay home. They're worried about going out. So right now, if we have any immigration issues, we have a partnership with a law firm in Ames that specializes in that. And we help them gather their information, and then we send them on to them. But right now, there's not much we can do. I don't think he's signed that order yet, has he? I think he just told us yesterday that that was going to happen. And immigration is always a tricky thing. You know, when we fill it out, Jen has to be careful that everything is just perfect because it can hold up the process for months. We have one family that just got their green cards, and they've been working on that for over a year. And it's just now come through. So it's a huge paper load process.
Yes. I guess if you never worked with it, you just can hardly believe how difficult it is.
Yes, we have a board member whose husband was just accepted for his citizenship. He had to take a trip back, I believe, for 3 weeks to his home country to figure out things there. But his paperwork stack is like 2 feet tall. It's just amazing how much paperwork they had to go through. So that's, you know, one of the deterrents for people wanting to get citizenship is it costs quite a bit of money. And for instance, for him, he had to go back to the country and stay there for 3 weeks. She went down to visit him. So the whole process costs quite a bit. And right now with money being short, that's another thing that will affect that citizenship process.
What is the feeling in Webster City? You said that the restaurants are still doing well. The food store's doing well. Obviously, you can't have any parties.
We had a couple weddings scheduled happen at Ace, which, of course, had to cancel their weddings. All of our rentals that we had for parties and events, the garden club does a plant sale. They had to postpone that. So, you know, not a lot going on there, just preparing so that when things get back. Hamilton County has only had 2 cases, so people are hopefully optimistic. We're doing the right things, and we're not going to get overrun like some of the other our counties have.
Well, and it's really amazing because I'm not quite sure. You mentioned that a lot of the people who work at Prestige probably live outside Hamilton County. I'm not.
Most of them live in Wright and Webster County. So we've been very fortunate. As far as I know, I've talked to 2 people that work with nursing homes, and they haven't had any cases, although they're prepared with quarantine rooms and staff. So we're just crossing our fingers and trying to do what we need to do to keep going here. It's hurt our programs at ACE because in June we usually have our busiest time, and that's when we do our youth programs. And we do a garden program. We had a lady come in to talk about bees. We had the Iowa State agricultural drone coming in to show the kids. We were making birdhouses. We had lots of things planned. So I think probably we'll have to adjust our plan, and we probably won't be able to do it in June, but we can do it in maybe August, or we can do it during weekends in the fall so that we still have some activities for those kids. We also have a big project going on at ACE. We are just in the final processes of making a licensed commercial kitchen, which is a shared use kitchen. So people can come and rent our kitchen and they can legally sell food out of it. And we have about 7 people who were ready to start, which now probably won't happen. It's been slower getting our supplies and our workers. And so that's disappointing because we thought we'd have people starting already. We had a baker and a caterer and someone who's going to serve brunches and 2 Latino women who are going to sell out of there. So, you know, right now at ACE, we're kind of in a holding pattern, mostly focused on the food pantry and what we can do to help those who need it, like everybody else. The Food Bank of Iowa has now rescinded all their income requirements for the food pantry, so anybody can come to the food pantry, because they know that even people who are making a lot of money before and wouldn't have qualified now are making nothing. So the economic thing has hit every area. So we have more people coming this time that wouldn't normally come. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Well, we're all in this together. Thank you so much for telling us what's happening up in Webster City. You've just heard from Kathy Vaughn, director of All Cultures Equal. As an institution intended to provide basic services for immigrants and to provide opportunities for a mixture of cultures, and all those cultures are being hit. And we have a music break before our next guest. Next guest comes from the south of our listening area, the Ballard School District. From the time KHOI went on the air, we have had opportunities to see how this school district nurtures the people in South Story towns and finds unique ways to meet practical needs. That my introduction to the South Story towns was when I was in Cambridge. It was summertime, and the mayor and the councilman were about to go out and mow the lawn. And the clerk was leaving to take her grandson to the swimming pool in Slater. And that's when I found out that all those towns share a swimming pool in Slater and a baseball diamond in Slater. So I was eager to see how those towns were helping people through the difficulties of having their schools closed and, in many cases, losing much of their income. The superintendent of the Ballard School District, Audie Maxey, has zoomed in to tell us how they learned what their families need. Audie, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Rupel, thanks for sticking with us and for being here to tell us how you found out what the needs were. Because, of course, you must have online courses. Do you have things like that? Not everybody has internet. How did you find out about this?
Shortly after the governor announced the recommended closure, we knew that at a minimum we'd be out of school until April 10th and resuming on the 13th. And the first week of the closure for many of the districts in Story County was a week of spring break. So we had actually all our administrators were all out of state. And so I had some time to think and work with the school board and understand some of the immediate challenges that we would face. And among those was recognizing that a number of our families rely on our school breakfast and lunch program. And so it occurred to us that we would have to jump on board and provide the emergency meal program like so many districts in the state are doing. We initiated that right away. However, we also understood that this may not be enough for a number of our families. So we put together, within that first week, we put together a survey and pushed it out to all of our households. We have 1,122 in our district. And within a week of sending the survey out and with great help from a number of our staff and all the buildings, we were able to get 100% response rate, which is tremendous for a survey. So we were able to identify, among other things, which families expressed concern about food and also which households didn't have internet connectivity.
Okay. It seemed to me there was a third thing that was on that list.
Shortly after the governor announced the closure, the Iowa Health and Human Services Director, Dr. Garcia, announced a plan to school districts to just try and understand where emergency child care could be provided to what she called essential workers. And those were obviously anybody in the medical field, first responders, and also those that worked in the food supply chain from grocery to manufacturers. And so the state recognized, because they weren't sure the extent and the impact of the pandemic on Iowa, they recognized that there may be a need for increased child care for those what they call essential workers. So we set out in this survey to also identify which households had a caregiver that was working in that capacity, and if they had concerns, should their hours increase dramatically, if they had concerns about child care. So those were the three big rocks. Probably the one related to connectivity was, we asked how many devices were in the household, because we understood that parents, many of them are working from home, and there could be, with children doing schoolwork during the period of closure and the parents working from home, it could be a challenge with devices. So we wanted to get that information as well. And, you know, we are what we call in education, a one-to-one district, meaning we provide a device, in our case, a Chromebook, for every student grades 3 through 12. And so we wanted to understand primarily if that was going to be sufficient, and then also would we have to provide additional support to our kindergarten through second grade students.
And this has all worked pretty well for you?
It's worked remarkably well. And I say that with all the recognition that this is extremely challenging for many households for a variety of reasons. And so when I say remarkably well, what I mean is we've identified families that we've now, for 2 weeks, in partnership with our Education Foundation and Fairway, our local Fairway, we've provided groceries to over 40 families. And we've also identified those households that don't have connectivity. And we've partnered with our local telecommunications company, cooperative, Huxley Communications. And they are going to provide service at no charge to those households. And the school district is purchasing the wireless routers to enable connectivity for those households and to enable those students to continue their schoolwork. To this point, we haven't, their essential workers, while obviously very essential, we haven't reached a situation where the crisis is in that heightened state like it is in so many places. So we haven't had to address those childcare needs, nor has that really, that effort hasn't occurred on that state level to this point. And we certainly hope it doesn't.
Well, that's a pretty big success story. I actually got into this story by talking to some of the people who were providing the food. And I learned that unlike Ames, for example, where they have people can come and to the schools, designated schools, and get grab-and-go meals, that you have, your school buses have not only the grab-and-go meals that you can get on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays when they come. I understand. Well, maybe you could tell that better than I could, how they distribute their food.
Well, you know, Susan, every school district is different. And, you know, I've been, you mentioned Ames, and they're just doing a remarkable job. And I'm fairly closely networked with superintendents and leaders in a number of districts. And I just applaud the efforts of all of them. We're collaborating and supporting one another with ideas. So what Ballard is doing specifically is we've identified, in addition to having one of our schools as a pickup point, we've identified a number of pickup points throughout our district. We have seven of them, and we strategically locate them in neighborhoods throughout Kelly, Cambridge, Huxley, and Slater, just to make it as convenient as possible for our families and our children that maybe are walking there, accessing the food by themselves. And we also, for those, we have a rural population as well, and we're doing some door-to-door deliveries for those breakfast and lunch meals that we're distributing 7 days a week. And for the groceries, the supplemental, we are doing those on a door-to-door basis. Those get delivered weekly on Monday.
Thank you so much
for telling us how you get around to all the students from the four towns of the Ballard School District.
It is. Our buildings are, we have an elementary building in Cambridge, an elementary building in Slater, and our middle school and our high school are both located in Huxley.
Well, thank you so much for being on with us. And we need to move to the end of the program. We have some important announcements. And one is that the Eco Fair that we mentioned at the beginning is really a big thing for KHOI. As you know, I think, as Pat may have mentioned, he's been doing a lot of the editing for the interviews we had with all the speakers. Pat, would you like to say anything about that?
Well, yes, yeah. Susan. The presenters that were ready to have their information shared on Saturday, April 25th at the Eco Fair. Many of those presenters, we're currently gathering sound files of their presentations that will be aired on 9 to 5 on Saturday. So those families and coworkers and a lot of connections to the Ames community should be reinforced. But to run the whole 8 hours, we've kind of branched out into a lot of the voices that have been included in KHOI in the last 8 years, I guess, will be featured. There'll be music from Big Blue Sky. Now, that's a popular group in Northeast Iowa, but the man who has been contributing to the Big Blue Sky, John Stravers, will be featured. He's also called the Hawk Man of Iowa. And our listeners may recall some of his stories over the years. John Howe will be featured also. Now, he's the director of the Raptor Resource Project. So we'll be having a discussion of the wildlife cams or videos that have really been adding to our natural outreaches, and particularly this time of year with the nesting bald eagles that are currently underway in Decorah, and also a peregrine falcon nest box that has a camera. People can check out their website. It's the Raptor Resource Project. So those will be some of the voices. A lot of the local environmentalists, Dr. Jim Pease, I think I mentioned also Dr. Irv Kloss. Mike Metz, who contributes to this program, will have a short segment. I've just been editing Rick Zarwell, who has been included with the Bird Friendly Iowa, and of which Ames has embarked on a mission to become designated as officially bird friendly. I guess we all appreciate our songbirds here in Ames also. So Rick Zarwell will be one of the voices included. Gosh, Matt Wetrick is going to be recorded later today. He's the naturalist over in Carroll County. So his segment will be featuring a lot of his environmental outreach to the youth, but also his photography is somewhat phenomenal. Mike Hovlick is going to be presenting another voice of the environment from Dallas County. Chris Atkins, who many of our listeners may recall, stories about his prairie awakening. And Chris has been an environmental educator over 30 years, so I'm really anxious to get his recorded thoughts later today. That's just a few, but there will be music included. And is that what you had in mind, Susan? Any other questions?
The eco-fair is a big thing. There are a lot of the hands-on things you can't see. Yeah. A lot of small businesses used to, of course, and there were always lots of little gifts that people could pick up. And
right,
I guess we can't end.
Well, this is a eco-fair adaptation. You know, Earth Day is here. You know, it's necessary to adapt to the changing times, and there'll be more of this in the future. And trying to do what we can to strengthen this community through our communication efforts.
Well, that's the natural process, right, Pat?
Yeah, well, that's part of the natural world. It sure is. Sure is
right.
These days.
Thank you for your report. It sounds like a very educational day, and a lot of familiar voices, and some that we may not have been familiar with before.
Yeah.
It sounds like you could tune in any time. I don't imagine many people will stick around for the whole. What is that?
Well,
nine to five.
Yeah. Well, it'll be programming. It will be in our archives, for that matter. So, we're looking forward to it.
That's right. People can go online and hear whatever they want to. Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it sounds like an exciting day. The thing that we really need to let our listeners know is usually we broadcast at 7, noon, and 7 p.m. But today, we have a program from the Ames Public Library, a story time, and also an adult time for finding out what other things that people can do. So if you want to hear local talk again, you can listen to it at 7 p.m. But if you have heard it, you can also hear a bonus at noon from the Ames Public Library.
Yeah.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Pat Schlarbaum. Today's guests were Carolyn Raffensperger, Kathy Vaughn, Audie Maxey.
And Local Talk will be rebroadcast, as Susan said, at 7 p.m., and at noon today, the Local Talk will present a special program from the Ames Public Library. To brighten your spirits and those of any children who might be living with you, you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Other music you heard was Juniper by Rainier Schnurenbrand and Driftless Moon by Big Blue Sky.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878.
or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you call, if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow Become a Member Donor button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
we'll see you again
on the radio.
Driftless mode. I've seen you, life moves on a little too fast.